It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
And from our national studios here in Accra and also networking all our regional FM stations and live on the internet at www.gbcghana.com, we welcome you once again to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program where we delve into the issues, looking at it from the perspective of those making the news and also the experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. 49th edition, Pressure Group AFAG maintains position that a complex building at Adabraka belongs to the NDC. Has AFAG got any evidence, and what do they intend to do? The capitation grant, has it achieved its set goals? Shra says some aspects should be reviewed. What are the reasons? We'll be delving into these issues. As Behind the News, and as usual, we'll be picking your text and comments on 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on to the first story. It looks like the dust on the said $20 million NDC head office is not going to settle anytime soon. The Alliance for Accountable Governance, AFAG, which initially raised concerns about the issue today, held a news conference and claimed there is evidence that the building really belongs to the NDC. But the NDC is still calling the bluff of AFAG, saying their claims are unfounded. What is the real truth about the issue? Who should be believed? Do we have to wait a little more for the truth? Well, joining us on the line is James Kwabena Bonfe of AFAG to state their side of the issue and why they are so strong on it. Good evening, James.
Good evening.
Yeah. What documentary proof do you have to the effect that the said building you have in mind belongs to the NDC?
Thank you very much, Kingsley, for having me, and very good evening to our very cherished listeners. First, before I come to the additional information we put out there today, it is important that we appreciate the high level of unparalleled inconsistencies exhibited by the NDC in a frailed attempt to discount the fact that they were putting up such a facility. First was the national organizer of the party, who between the 5th and the 6th of December had to turn around and do a U-turn to talk about the fact later on that indeed they had acquired an 85 plots to put up a facility like that. Solomon Nkansa, the Deputy National Propaganda Secretary, admitted that yes, they had such a mansion, but that the figure that AFAG was putting to it as 20 million Ghana cedis was way too high, but that it was 5 million. Later on Ekusi saying at Asempa FM, Bernard Alotijekos, the propaganda secretary or the communication director of the NDC for the central region, admitted that yes, they have such a facility. But on the same program, he did a quick turnaround after there had been attacks on him through phone calls to run away from it. The deputy national organizer, within the same period on the 7th of December, Joshua Akamba, on XFM, admitted that yes, they had such a building that AFAG had made reference to. But today, we put out there the special NDC bulletin called NDC Frontline News, which was shown or which was available to members of their party at their special delegates conference to elect who the flag bearer would be for the 2012 general election, which is the issue number 18, dated July 2011, on paragraph 2, showing an edifice which is situated at Adabaka, of which we also had pictures. And I, with your kind permission, I just want to read one of the paragraphs in quotes. Quoting, two sites have been acquired for building a befitting national headquarters. One is at Adabaka in Accra, which is being developed into a four-story edifice that will eventually serve regional users. A 20-acre plot, which indeed translates into 80 plots, has been acquired and fenced off at OEB on the Accra-Dodowa Road. This is the site where a headquarters complex will be constructed to house offices, party school, guest houses, conference centers, and all other facilities required to run a modern political party like the NDC. Which particular building at Adabraka was Johnson Asiedun Ketia, the chief scribe of the NDC, making reference to in this particular document stating the state of the party? If they are asking us for the land title, what is the land title that Asiedun Ketia made reference to in this particular document? Or is it that they are now renouncing their own official mouthpiece? And where and how much did it cost to acquire that 80 pieces of plots at Oyibi? And what about the one at Oyarifa that we are being told about? We are demanding this because you have a party that only 3 years ago claimed it could not pay for its rent facility or the rent facility that they have now at Kokomlemle. And yet, 3 years down the line, it is able to acquire $20 million to put up such facilities. Where does the money come from, Afak is asking?
Yeah. And hello, Kwame. You are asking the question, and let me quickly bring in the propaganda secretary of the NDC, Richard Kwashiga, to respond to a few of the concerns before we get back to you. Good evening, Richard.
Good evening.
And you've heard your colleague from the other side speak about the issues. What is your response?
Thank you so much, Kinsley. I think that Kabila was referring to an official mouthpiece of the NDC, which I don't know about. Except that he now defines for us what is our mouthpiece, or that each represents our mouthpiece. Besides, he talks about the NDC that was unable to pay its rent and electricity and all that. And yet, the same NDC, which was in a position that was able to win an election, and we all know too well that a party that is so poor, I cannot win an election. Other than that, the CPP would have won the last elections, because we know that apart from having a solid manifesto, apart from having a solid message, a political party must be financially resourceful in order to win an election in contemporary society. Now, we are saying that we do not own this property at Adabraka. But the Alpha continues to insist that the property belongs to the NDC. This is the second time round. We are holding this conference to actually push this vicious agenda of the NDC. We know too well that the Alpha is an appendage of the NPP. And as an appendage of the NPP, that is so desperate to come into office or to win the next polls, they will do anything whatsoever, as it were, to taint the image of the NDC. We are only asking a simple question of the Alpha, that if indeed you have the evidence to the effect that this property at Adabraka belongs to the NDC, show proof of it. Now, you are making reference to pictures and other statements in a certain document that you claim to be our mouthpiece. I don't know at which point the so-called document he's referring to has become the official mouthpiece of the NDC as the national party.
So, Richard, you are saying it outright that that building in question does not belong to the party.
It has not. That's why I'm asking them a very simple question: that produce documents to the effect. Now, it's very easy for Alpha to go to the land title registry to get information as to the fact that the building they're talking about stands in the name of the National Democratic Congress.
But you heard him talk about conflicting responses earlier when they put the information out.
Yeah, you see, conflicting responses as a result of the way questions are asked, sometimes people who are not the official spokespersons of the NDC are sometimes asked questions, and they also, in some kind of excitement, make responses or give responses. Now, first of all, he talks about conflicting reports, statements from the national organizer. It's untrue that the national organizer gave a conflicting statement as compared to that of Kofi Adams, the Deputy General Secretary. Now, the only thing that Yao Jam said, which probably did not contradict actually, was that he talked about Fuyarifa instead of saying OEB, and he said that they own a property at OEB. We're not denying that. You know, and he talks about some other people, Joshua Akamba and all this. Now, clearly, Joshua Akamba, I don't know exactly what he said, but from my own interaction with Joshua Akamba, he misunderstood the issues. He talked about my deputy, Solomon Ikanza. They talked about Solomon Ikanza. And this was in a discussion program. And Solomon Ikanza clearly might have misconstrued what the issue was at the time. And probably my thought that they were talking about the property at UB. Now, so if indeed you said the general secretary of the party had said that we are putting up a structure. The general secretary did not mention Adabraka.
Yeah, Richard, now, please hold on. I'll get back to you again, but let me come to you, Kwabena. You've heard Richard speak about the issues. Yes, they are putting up a property and it is nowhere near the Braka. So really, still calling for that evidence.
Well, it is interesting the way Richard Kwashiga is beating about the bush with so much difficulty that he does not even care the lashes that the bushes will give to his pupils and affect his fight. See, we did not conjecture this NDC frontline news. Do they have it or not? The NDC Deputy General Secretary, Mr. Kofi Adams, this evening admitted it on Joy FM. So the contradictions continue. Two, did the General Secretary make reference to the fact that they had put up an office complex and that it was in an advanced stage or not at their Congress? Yes, he did. Did he not hear it? It is documented here. And he's asking for land title. Richard, I just want to do you a favor by giving you a clear answer. I don't know whether your dad is alive or not, but when your dad's will is being read and he says that my property at IPS is to be given to this man, or this my son, Richard Kwashiga, are you going to deny that your father owns that building or not? Or are you going to accept it? We are talking about the state of the party being discussed or being presented to members of the Congress of the party. And these are the property that, according to the General Secretary of the party, they have. So presented, so accepted.
And Adabraka specifically mentioned.
He mentions Adabraka. I mentioned it. I quoted it. Let me quote it. Two sites have been acquired for building a defeating national headquarters. One is at Adabraka in Accra, which is being developed into a four-story edifice that will eventually serve regional users. A 20-acre plot has been acquired and fenced off at OEB on the Accra-Dodowa Road. Are we conjecturing these things? Please.
Yeah, Richard.
NDC better come clear. Because even Richard Kwashiga's response this evening is making matters worse. All we are asking simply is, where did the money come from within this short period of time?
Richard, you see the question still being posed.
Yeah, Kesley. Uh-huh. I think that clearly the AFAG is adding to certain information they claim they have. Because clearly, I have a copy of the statement that was read at Sonyani. The General Secretary did not mention Adabraka whatsoever. Besides, he's talking about a news paper that belongs to the NDC, and that is our official mouthpiece. And I'm saying that that is not true. That is not true. Why would he want to insist that because a certain document bears a certain name, and for that matter, it is our official mouthpiece? I mean, it's amazing the way my good friend Bonfrey, who is an ardent supporter of Nana Akufo-Addo, would want to press this matter and make it stick and make it look like it is the truth. We think that there are issues that ought to be clarified. And the issues that ought to be clarified are, one, whether indeed the structure they're talking about stands in the name of the NDC, and whether indeed the NDC as a political party has spent $20 million as they purport on a so-called structure. Of course, the NDC, in its effort to own a structure of its own, has been engaging in fundraising activities even whilst we're in opposition. Yet our friends in the NPP and AFAC would want the world to believe that we are so poor that we could not even pay electricity bill. For which reason, they are wondering how we can even have resources, assuming without admitting that, yes, the NDC has been able to raise $20 million. Well, must that be a surprise to anybody? First of all, like I said, the last elections in which the NPP, which then was in government, spend colossal sums of the taxpayers' money, yet they lost the elections. How did we pitch them to it? It was not just about great strategy, but it was also about financial resource. If Kabila or Bonfrey saying that the NDC never had any money to prosecute the last campaign, because to them, they are so poor, maybe poorer than the church mouse, as they would want the world to believe. Now, let me ask, which are the critical issues that we should be talking about today as we proceed into 2012? I largely would think that the issues must squarely be within the domain of what the NDC has done for the people of Ghana as compared to what the NPP did in these first 4 years. Our friends are running away from the crucial and the most important matters, diverting attention with issues that are non-issues. Clearly, if one would want to move into the realm of non-issues, which are indeed issues, then we should rather be talking about the NPP flag bearer Akufo-Addo, who was reported to have gone irresponsibly urinated around mosques.
Richard, we want to leave this one out. Richard, you know, we want to leave this one out.
Honestly, I'm sorry, but that is the truth.
You know, when we create the platform, we want to always keep the language above board. Yes.
Carefully. Yes. I think that these are the issues AFAC should be talking about. Whether the two leading candidates for 2012 presidential race are men of character or not. Whether indeed President Mook's as compared to Akufo-Addo.
We want to thank you for your time tonight. Thank you very much. Richard Kwashiga is the NDC propaganda secretary. But, Kwabena Bonfrey is talking about the fact that this is not so important and the party is in a position to really raise money. They've had fundraising and all.
Well, let me say this, that the Dagumbes have a saying that men who don't have drums to beat often turn around and beat their chest as though their chest all of a sudden have become drums. If Richard Kwashiga is telling us today that propaganda, as propaganda secretary of the NDC, discussions about accountability of political parties to the people of this country, especially so when the state coffers is in place at their disposal, is not important. Ghanaians, I hope, are listening and will judge accordingly. If Richard Kwasiga is telling us today that people who could not pay for rent fees of hired office accommodation all of a sudden can accumulate within a period of 3 years $20 million and put up edifices around the world or around the country at prime places, and we do not need to know where they got the money from. I am sure Ghanaians are listening and will judge accordingly. Today is telling us that as NDC, they did not ask and would not want to discuss about the conduct of their political office holders with respect to financial administration and financial high moral ground. Ghanaians, I'm sure, are listening.
Governor Bamfe, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening. Governor Bamfe is with AFAG, Alliance for Accountable Governance. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Behind the News, still live on Radio Ghana and networking with all our regional FM stations. Some of your text messages, CAU Farouk from Tamale saying, Kingsley, AFAG should give us a break. The so-called $20 million is not what Ghanaians want. Alhaji Mashoud from Boku, AFAG is a wing of the MPP. They should not be taken serious. And the $20 million could have been used to finance the Upper West Regional Hospital or pay for the over 460 students in WA who cannot access senior high school. We didn't have a name to it, but that is, you are proceeding on the premise that it is true, whoever it is that didn't have the name. And I do Jemfi Eric from Wamanafo BA. AFAC should keep quiet and think about something meaningful. And Eliasu from Tamale is saying, Kingsley, why is the NDC denying ownership of their headquarters? Isn't it strange that the NDC that struggled to pay utility bills in opposition can now afford this mansion? That is a question Eliasu is posing and still proceeding on the earlier premise that is still being denied. We move on behind the news. The capitation grant was introduced in 2005 in fulfillment of the government's constitutional mandate to provide free compulsory universal basic education, FCUBE. It was aimed at ensuring that many Ghanaian children of school-going age have access to basic education. The government currently spends 4 Ghana cedis 50 pesos on every child in an academic year as capitation grants. The Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, SHRAJ, however, says the money is inadequate and recommends that it should be increased to 7 Ghana cedis per child in the next academic year. The government should also release the grant in time to the pupils. Ms. Loretta Vivian Lamte is the commissioner of SHRAJ and she's joined us on the line for us to explore the issue further. Good evening, madam.
Good evening.
Before we even get to the main issues, let's look a little bit at SHRAJ and human rights. Recently, you've been talking a little about human rights and integrity. Can you break it down for us? What has been your main concern?
Our main concern has been that we feel that beyond all specific efforts that might be made to combat corruption by way of laws, by way of extra vigilance, by way of enforcement, proper investigation of corruption allegations and enforcement of decisions, we feel that fundamentally corrupt acts come down to a view of one's own integrity and our integrity as a people. And that if we can foster a culture of integrity, or not even a culture, we feel that as Ghanaians we are people with a strong moral core, a core of integrity, and that if we can simply remind ourselves of that and have that come to the fore in every aspect of our endeavor, that's where we will start to begin the real battle against corruption.
Do you have a sense of feeling that talking about issues of integrity, we've dropped our guards a little?
I think so. I think that is a good way to describe it. We have dropped our guard a little. We are by no means, this is not a corrupt nation. It is not a corrupt business environment. We're not in that category, but we've become a favored destination for business people. And in the rush to do business in Ghana, or and that's to do with businesses coming from outside. But I speak equally to people doing Ghanaians doing business in their home country. In the rush to get ahead, to be the one that wins the contract, to be the one that gets favored, you know, we've kind of extended what is initially perhaps a culture of saying thank you, of rewarding people who have done something for you. We've extended that into a situation where, yes, it can lead into corruption. So it is a question of letting our guard down rather than simply overnight becoming, you know, a nation full of corrupt. We're not saying anything like that. We still have quite a bit to be proud of, especially when you compare us to many other African countries.
Yeah. Recently, we had the results of a survey that was conducted, and that dwelt on perception. Can we base whatever we think about our nation in relation to integrity and anti-corruption on perception?
No, we can't. It's simply one measurement, and obviously measurements, you know, particularly when they're done by way of surveys and polls, have their limitations. So it's just an indicator, but it was an indicator of concern to us for us to have dropped a few points, you know, on the corruption perception index. But you're right, it is perception. I don't think we would be looking at only that and forming a view. I think that at the Commission, our view is that, frankly, even if we were going up the scale in the corruption index, this is a battle, this is a task that began many years ago, not just at the Commission, but as a country, but certainly when the Commission had the first integrity conference in 1998. From that time, we tried to shine a spotlight on corruption. So that means that even in a year where we've perhaps done well on the corruption perception index, we still have markers, targets that we are trying to achieve, laws that we want to pass, a certain framework, you know, that we want to have in place. We would still feel that work must be done, regardless of the perception. So it isn't, we're not basing our view just on perception, no.
Yeah. So having been in the seat for a while, do you have so much of the issues of corruption and integrity coming to you?
Not in terms of cases, but as you know, corruption is by its very nature an area, an issue that might not always come to the fore, and that doesn't mean that it's not there underlying certain activities. So I wouldn't say that we've got that much coming to the fore. We've had, we issued our state of corruption report. I think we've had about 1,000, just over 1,000 cases in the past year. And these are cases of corruption along the lines of, let's say, diverting pharmaceuticals from aimed, intended for government hospitals into use in private pharmacies, things like that. So, no, corruption is not at the forefront of the work of the Commission, even though it is at the forefront of our minds as something that has to be targeted and worked on.
So, do you have a trend in the type of cases getting to Shrash presently, perhaps, within the past year?
Do you mean the corruption cases or the...
No, the type of cases, generally.
Oh, the bulk of our cases come under our human rights mandate rather than corruption or administrative justice. And the bulk of those human rights cases relate to domestic family-related human rights. We have a lot of child maintenance cases. We get a lot of mothers, you know, bringing reports to the Commission, you know, to have the Commission help in having indigent fathers pay maintenance. We are unfortunately getting domestic violence cases. And then there are others that are particular, you know, that we haven't seen that much of this year, but in previous years we had, you know, human rights violations in the mining community. But many of those type of cases, once they've been brought to Shraj's attention and we've done investigations, we found that remedial action has been taken. So, you know, we've made lots of progress on that. I think certainly the bulk of it is family cases. And because of that,
mm-hmm.
Well, partly because of that, we've got quite a high rate of success in terms of, you know, over 80% of the cases have been resolved through mediation.
Yeah. I guess it is because of the family cases and the child maintenance cases that perhaps you've gone straight into the issues of education and looking at the fact that the capitation grant will need to be increased. Is that because of that?
It isn't. It's really, we raised the issue of the capitation grant in presenting the State of Human Rights in Ghana report that Traj does on a regular basis. And the capitation, well, in presenting the highlights of that report, we looked at particular rights that we focused on in the year, or rights that are always going to be at the top of our list. And children's rights are always going to be high on our list. And the right to education is at the top of our list. It is in the context of presenting our views on the state of children's rights with regard to the right of education, the right to education, that we brought up the capitation grant. And, you know, if there's time, I'd certainly like to restate, you know, what we actually said, what I actually presented in terms of our views on the state of education. So we weren't, you know, jumping straight into the capitation grant. We always look at how far we are going, how well we are doing as a nation in terms of making sure that our young people have that basic right being taken care of.
Yeah. If you are talking about that and also children's rights, our Children's Act will have it that parents have a joint responsibility to cater for the children, and the state shall support them in this.
Exactly.
And that is also the recommendation of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. The recommendation is that government should increase the capitation grants just because some are withdrawing. Doesn't it then mean that for some parents, they think it's time to withdraw their support?
Well, you know, let me say categorically, I did not say, and Traj's position has not been, that there's been a major outflow or high dropout rate of students from school.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to take this opportunity to say that categorically. Indeed, in reporting on where we are on the right to education, we felt that much of it was positive. And that's why, you know, if I can take a moment, maybe I should just say what we actually said on the right to education. Would that perhaps be of use to your listeners? Because I do think it's problematic when one says, when one is critical, Shraj is critical where we need to be, but we also give credit where credit is due. And we did not say, we simply were not saying that students were dropping out of schools. In actual fact, there's been an increase in enrollment, and so I very much agree with the Honorable Ayariga and what he said about school enrollment numbers being up. There was a specific point that I made, not even in presenting the report, but in a subsequent interview, that may have been misrepresented.
Okay.
But I think that for the benefit of your listeners that were not there when we presented the report, shall I take a moment just to say what we
if you can
said?
Restate that portion for us for clarification.
Yes. Basically, you know, as we said, that the delivery and the expansion of quality education remains a profound challenge, and I think we'd all agree with that.
Yes.
Notwithstanding important initiatives such as the Ghana School Feeding Program and the capitation grant by the government, the lack of trained teachers in public schools contributes to the poor quality of education at the basic school level. Less than 60% of primary school teachers have proper professional training, and the district had only 37% of trained teachers. Now, according to the results of the monitoring exercises over the five-year period that we were looking at, from 2006, a large number of schools, especially basic schools in rural communities, lack adequate teaching and learning materials, notwithstanding the free compulsory universal basic education policy of the government. The continuous existence of non-school-going children who are supposed to enjoy free basic education is disturbing. Of the 211 basic public schools inspected in 2010 to evaluate the disbursement of the capitation grant, The commission found that the grant has been of assistance to the school. And I repeat, has been assistance to the school.
Mm-hmm.
The grant has improved funding support to the schools and has increased the supply of teaching and learning materials to the school. However, 60% of schools monitored continue to charge fees. And by that, we mean PTA and printing levies. They may be small. They are quite understandable in some cases, but they have an impact. So 60% of them continue to charge some fees to support their operations due to the inadequacy of the grant. And also, delays in the release of the grant are seriously undermining the efficacy of the capitation grant program. So we feel it's an excellent program, but they have been delayed.
Uh-huh.
So finally, what I said was that the commission commends the government for increasing the capitation grant to 4 CDs 50 pesos per child per term in 2009. However, in the view of the commission, the rate is still too low. We therefore recommend that the grant be increased to 7 CDs per child in 2012. Also, the commission calls on the government to release the grant to the schools before the commencement of each school term.
Mm-hmm.
The capitation grant should be administered in such a manner that would ensure that all Ghanaian children benefit from high-quality basic education. And
yeah.
Lastly, and this is important, the commission notes that the combined effect of the school feeding program and the capitation grant has increased school enrollment, retention, and attendance by pupils in deprived communities. The government urges the government of Ghana to increase the coverage of the school feeding program from an estimated 1 million children as of September 2011 to 2 million school children by September 2012.
Yeah.
Now, you can see from this that we are in full agreement with the position of the Deputy Minister for Education that school enrollment is up, that the capitation grant is beneficial, that it is having a positive impact. And we're saying, let's see if we can do more. And certainly when we make recommendations about increasing the numbers, we're looking at how to achieve maximum impact. But our recommendations regarding budget are recommendations. We do not set the budget.
Okay.
Madam, it was a positive review.
Okay. Ms. Loretta Lamte, will please hold you on the line quickly and move to the other line. We have the Director of Basic Education and Acting Deputy Director General of the Ghana Education Service, Mr. Stephen Edu, on the line to still expand a little bit on the need for the capitation grant. I'm looking at the ultimate aim. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Sorry for holding you on the line for some time. Loretta Lamte has clarified a few issues in terms of the enrollment and all. Initially, it wasn't like that in the open. We were thinking that it was something else she was talking about. But for purposes of this discussion and for the other laws that exist, we knew F-Cube before capitation grant came. Are they the same?
Thank you very much, and let me also thank Madam for the clarification, maybe before I proceed, let me take this opportunity to explain the background of the capitation grant. And like Madam said, the capitation grant is meant to abolish all forms of school fees that used to exist before the introduction of the capitation grant. You know, it is a way of also ensuring that every Ghanaian child has access to quality basic education. And that one is a constitutional mandate. So because of this, the government made everything possible to ensure that no child is denied access to basic education. That was why the fees were abolished. And at that time, the fees that parents were paying included fees for sports, fees for culture, and then schools were also charging some amount of money for little maintenance in the school and sanitation. And also they were also collecting some money to buy some few teaching and learning materials to support or facilitate learning. So these were the fees that were abolished. So in place of that, the government introduced the capitation grant. So basically the capitation grant was introduced for a purpose. Now, at the time of the introduction of the capitation grant, we didn't have any payment, paying fees like electricity, utility, and whatever. So these fees were not there at that time. So when we are talking about inadequacies, because I think Madam has rightly said that there are two challenges that he finds with the capitation grant. That is the inadequacy of the fund and then delay in the payment of the fund. So let me also take this opportunity to explain. You see, the inadequacies of the funds, people are saying that the amount of money that is left for the school for development and other things is very, very low. That one, notwithstanding, you see, we need to look at what the purpose of the capitation grant was, because part of the money is taken for sports and courts, which is organized at the school level, at the district level, at the regional level, and then at the national level. So part of the money that is capitation is taken to take care of all these level activities that go on within the school system. So what is left is then kept in the school so that the heads or the school can use to improve education, especially in terms of basic maintenance, in terms of small teaching learning materials, and then sanitation programs within the school system. So if you are talking about inadequacies, then we need to look at, are we going to increase the fees for sports and culture, or are we going to increase the fees that remains in the school to take care of the school development? I think this is where the argument is, that we need to discuss further to see where the increases need to be taken care of.
But have you had a consensus from the school authorities as of now?
You see, the schools, we are dealing with a large number of schools, over 20,000 basic schools, including both primary and junior high, and it differs from school to school. You see, if you take schools in Accra, for instance, they have, most of the schools in Accra have electricity. Most of them also have water and whatever, and they are paying for these things. Some of them have even got to the extent of hiring watchmen and other things, and they are doing all these things under the pretext of the support from the PTAs. But the unfortunate thing is that when PTAs are collecting these monies, they are collecting in the name of the PTA. But unfortunately, sometimes some parents complain. But we in education think that the government does not say that parents should not contribute to their children's education, except that the government doesn't want any child to be denied access to education because of payment of any fees of the sort.
But Mr. Edu, when it's a levy, then it's just like fees, because if it's not paid, the person will be driven out of school.
So, you see, that is what is wrong with the whole thing. Because if parents, you attend a meeting and then you decide that you are going to levy yourself to support the school, you see, that is where the problem is. Because it shouldn't be that if a parent is not able to pay for anything that he or she has agreed, that before any decision is taken by the PTA, at least all of them will have to agree, so that if maybe some parents may not be able to pay at once, maybe for a particular charge, will it be possible for maybe to spread the payment in a way? But the unfortunate thing is that if you look into all these systems, you will find that parents have signed that they agree to such a decision. But unfortunately, not all these parents also attend meetings. So the assumption is that if you don't attend a meeting and a decision is taken, it's taken on your behalf. So the problem is, parents can agree on any terms to contribute to support. In the past, you used to have communal labor. Parents were going for communal labor to support the schools in things like the school maintenance and whatever. So if it has become necessary that maybe the cost of managing a school system, especially in the urban areas, is becoming expensive, I think that is why the Honorable Ayaraga said that maybe we need to look at the issues at stake. But I would wish that at least we will sit down and then look at the cost of education at all levels. Mm-hmm. Right now, we are working on this. There is a committee that is working on education financing in this country, and I think they are taking care of some of the costs that are coming up as a result of urbanization and whatever.
Yeah, so Shirley is talking about 7 cities in this case.
Right.
Is government thinking of a figure like that soon?
No, the problem is that on what basis are we going to increase to 7 cities?
That's please hold on. Since we have Madame Loretta Lamte still on the line, perhaps she can help us. Maybe they did a few calculations around. But I'm coming back to you. 7 cities, and Mr. Edu is asking, perhaps you worked out a few things to reach this figure.
Well, actually, I have to say I agree with this, Mr. Edu, that in the final analysis, we have to look at all of the things that the money is to cover. So we were looking, we're doing calculations about what would provide, you know, what's the shortfall, what's a level that we feel that the government may be able to manage that would also, you know, ensure that all of the costs are covered, even for parents, or almost all, even for parents that cannot add even the levies. But that is not to say that the other things that the educational funds are meant to cover aren't just as important. So at the end of the day, much as we recommend a number for that particular heading, we do recognize that if funds are spent on other areas of education, you know, and that prevents the grant from going to 7 cities, but it goes, extra funds go to some other area, all of that, you know, we really are all working towards just increasing the level and quality and scope of, and reach, let me say, of our basic education. So no, I don't think we have, you know, specific numbers that can be given over a radio program to say, well, if we do this, 7 cities will be achievable. We're looking at what are the optimum numbers to us. But it's something that the stakeholders, and we are all stakeholders, we're parents, we're, see, everybody, you know, that it's something that can be discussed, what is possible. But at the end of the day, it is government's responsibility to finally decide what is affordable. And we're not in any way, you know, feeling that we can stand in the place of government and decide what is doable.
Yeah.
That is not our role.
It is about children. And Ms. Lamte, let me just ask you, you did a general one on children's rights. Is there a lot of respect for such rights, not just for education?
We don't feel that there's enough respect for children's rights. We feel that, and this I have to say is not just Ghana. I mean, I think it's something that's been commented on elsewhere. People take children for granted, and people take children's rights for granted. You know, children come from us, and so we sort of think they're extensions of us, and therefore we can decide what they should and shouldn't have, and what is a right and what is not. And I think that's something that we can work on.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's just speaking broadly. But there are specific rights that we are concerned about, you know, child labor and child exploitation. And I know, you know, as your time is, let me just quickly say, really, that in terms of reporting about school dropouts, I've already clarified that that's not what we were saying. But let me say that the context in which whatever comment was misreported came up was to do with child labor and children's rights, and basically saying to parents who have their children, you know, doing quarrying, doing the different types of hazardous work that we see, you know, young adolescents doing. One was basically saying that things like the capitation grant are a factor in a parent deciding, well, you know, I can send my child to school, but I'll also have to find some additional money. And instead, this child was intended to be the breadwinner. He's 12. When I was 12, I was, you know, the breadwinner for the family. Those families making those choices. So, you know, there's a big difference between parents deciding they won't send their children to school, which does happen because they feel that they will have to find some additional money, and people taking their kids out of school because of the grant, and that we don't feel is happening. But for those whose children are in those communities where we see those child labor violations, it's what you said at the very beginning. It is a joint responsibility. There's a responsibility of parents to respect the rights of those children and give them the best opportunities at an early, the best that one can within one's financial means, and that means not putting them to work.
Madam, we'll find time to explore more on the other issues, specifically on children's rights broadly. But for now, I want to thank you so much for your time this evening.
My pleasure.
Ms. Loretta Vivian Lamte is the commissioner of SHRAJ on the line with us. But so we have Mr. Stephen Edu, the director of basic education and acting deputy director general of the Ghana Education Service. Mr. Edu, you've seen exactly the perspective from which SHRAJ came from, and it's saying that it is the mandate of government to decide what is appropriate in terms of funding. So where are we going? You've spoken about the committee.
Yeah, so the committee has almost finished with its work. Yesterday, we met the development partners at least to discuss the issues. Now, we are going to have a stakeholders workshop where we will invite stakeholders, including parents and all other civil societies. They will be looking at the gap, the funding gap, to achieve quality education, because quality education has so many implications, and we need to look at what is the gap. Then when we are able to identify the gap, then we will be talking about who bears the cost of the gap. Then this is where we will discuss with stakeholders to see the way forward, because education is expensive, but we need to look at who bears the cost, because there's nothing which is free in this world, except that maybe somebody will be paying for the cost while the other person may not. So those who will not be paying will be thinking that it is free, but there's nothing which is free in this world. So the Education Finance Committee will come out with the gap that exists to enable us to achieve quality basic education for our children.
Yeah.
And we also believe in the rights of the Ghanaian child, mm-hmm. that children should have the right to quality education. And if you go into our rural setups, you realize that most of them are suffering, and that the condition under which they are schooling, even the home and all that. So as a country, we need to look at these things so that our children will grow up to very confident children to be able to take up the mantle of the country.
Yeah, Mr. Edu, I asked the question when we were beginning. Is the capitation grant the same as the free compulsory universal basic education?
Yeah, it's one of the components.
Towards meeting it.
Yeah, the components of the free compulsory basic education came from the Education for All, which was agreed upon in 1992, mm-hmm. and Ghana is a signatory to that particular EFA. So as part of the EFA, we have to remove all the barriers that deny children access to education. And one of the barriers is the school fees. So the introduction of the capitation grant was to take away all barriers in terms of school fees so that nobody will be denied access to education because of their fees. So the capitation grant is part of the F-Cube to ensure that education is free for children.
So it means it is still in process?
Yes, it is still in process. You know, free compulsory education is in process because we still not achieved 100%. Some of our children are still out of school. But you know, some of these children who are out of schools, it may not necessarily be that they are not able to pay whatever. But the point is that there may be other factors. So as I'm talking now, we are also working towards a form of complementary basic education that will really allow a very flexible education system that will allow all children who are out of school at least to get into school, so that we'll be able to achieve education for all that we are all yearning for.
Mr. Edu, as I told Ms. Lamte, there will be time to explore the other issues around it, apart from just cost. But for now, thank you so much too for your time.
You're very welcome.
That is the Director of Basic Education and Acting Deputy Director General of the Ghana Education Service, Mr. Stephen Edu. But there is an organization that is so active in campaigning for education of children in this country. The National Coordinator of the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition, Leslie Tete, is on the line to chip in quickly as to what can be done to still help the process and maintain enrollment in schools. Good evening, Leslie.
Good evening.
Yes, you've listened to the discussion so far. For NEC, what is so important in ensuring that what has been started that is positive is maintained?
Well, on the discussion of the competition, I think that some of the problems that she has identified in the report has been identified by some reports earlier on. So I think, like Mr. Edu has stated, there is the need for us as a country to evaluate some of these football policies apply a certain and look at where the loopholes are. It's not just about the increases in the amount, it's also about possibly having a threshold for children with special needs, children in areas of disability, because you cannot have a base rate for every Ghanaian child, because the situation is not the same everywhere. So these are some of the things that a national forum looking at some of these processes and policies could address.
Leslie, with the quality of your line, because of that, we have to end it here. But certainly, as we promised, these are issues we'll be revisiting. I want to thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Leslie Tete is with the Ghana National Education Campaign Coalition as the national coordinator. Some of your tests here before we go. NDC have nothing good to offer Ghanaians except lies and deceit. Kudos to AFAC for the exposure. Sham. Yendi is saying so. Mwazi, the captation grant has achieved a lot, but not enough, but because there is no adequate supervision. And Baba Musa UDS, Kabila and AFAG are only seeking to gain cheap popularity and mischief. And Frank Cratchy West, I think the captation grant has not achieved its objectives. Some heads of institutions from national to local levels are misappropriating the funds. Frank, if you can give us some evidence, we'll be following up on that one. And Vincent, who Richard Kwashiga is not a good propaganda secretary. His contributions this evening is making matters worse for NDC party. I remember hearing the general secretary mention the Dabraka on radio in connection with building a party office. And DK Luglu Tema, Richard Kwashiga must go straight to the point and clear the air. And Shai Buapa West, where was AFAG when 17 MPP presidential aspirants picked nomination forms for 5,000 Ghana cities each? And Andrew Mangaboku, the captation grant should be extended to private basic schools. They contribute to national development. And Kanabi Gideon, Tamale Polyclinic, we've had an overdose of MPP and NDC issues. God should save us. And Akimidi Damango, Kabila, we Ghanaians will judge for ourselves. We await 2012. And Mohamed Naniwa, so a head office is more important to NDC than the three regions in the north. They can get $20 million for an office, but cannot get money for Sada. I want to thank you all for being there and listening, but you are the best judges on whatever is happening. And this is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of our production team of Christopher Siedu, John Pobi, Bryce Agama and Abraham Asari, with Ose Balubi at the controls and Barbara Yakubu doing the summaries, my name is Kingsley of Interest.